Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Football is about to be underway. Your boy is here, and I have a really fun free thing that we want to give to all of PHL Nation. Bang! Our official LSU schedule for 2025. There will be a downloadable link for this dope graphic made by Lisi Dex Productions. Look at this. Look at this. And obviously, week one is a big one. This is just so dope. It's one of the coolest things ever made for PHL. So I want to start talking about the four letters that will define LSU's season. And we did a breakdown on this earlier in the summer, but that was when we did not know about the LSU defensive tackle having the type of camp that we all expected, or that we didn't really expect them to have. That has been everything, right? Bernard Gooden has been so unfreaking believably good. What if he is elite? What if he truly is an all-SEC level defensive tackle? Well, if that is the case, you might be looking at a way better LSU rush defense. So RYBC stands for rush yards before contact. So there is yards per carry, that is YPC, and that is pretty much the average amount of yards you give up on every single carry that the other team has. And that includes quarterback scrambles, zone reads, just simple handoffs, any type of rushing play that is your average yards per carry. But there are way more advanced metrics out there, and rush yards before contact is pretty simple. How many yards does a runner normally have before he is contacted by the defense? And obviously, you want that number to be low. Okay, you really, really, really do. So you don't want a high rush yards before contact, because that means not only are they running the football on you, they're running the football with ease. And when you look at LSU's rushing statistics last year, okay, let's take a look at this. We had our worst yards per carry, that simple YPC, that we have ever had since the post-Aranda era. As you can see, our numbers have gone down, and we gave up a whopping 5.11 yards per carry last year, which was 15th in the SEC, and that, simply put, is unacceptable. Now, that was Blake Baker's first season, and I do want to show that Blake Baker at Missouri had pretty elite defenses when it comes to stopping the run. You can see yards per carry, his final season at Missouri, that great defense, 4.49. That's a pretty good number. Even though it was ninth in the SEC, it's still a good number. And then in 2022, 3.68 yards per carry, which, of course, is very good. That was third in the SEC. But we then get into RYBC and RYAC. RYBC is rush yards before contact. RYAC is rush yards after contact. So RYAC is pretty simple. How many yards do you give up after first contact? That's normally a good way of determining if your defense is good at tackling, right? And this has been a common PHL type of theme where many of us have seen LSU, the defense, give up so many rushing yards after contact, which means sloppy tackling. So what about LSU last year? Well, while we were 15th in yards per carry, we were last in the SEC in rush yards before contact at a whopping 3.35 yards per carry. Okay, and then you'll see rush yards after contact, 2.78, which is slightly better, but it's still a lot. So you've heard me, and I not only said it here, I said it on another show, Blake Ruffino's show last night. I said it in an appearance with No Chill Sports last week, and I'll say it again here. LSU was really bad at the touchdown saving tackle, but in defense of Sage Ryan and the LSU defensive backs who sucked at stopping 40, 50, 60-yard touchdown runs, we did not do a good enough job forcing the offense to really work for their yards, right? That's why rush yards before contact is so important. And by the way, the rush yard before contact number at 3.35 was the worst ever charted by SEC StatCat in his charting history, which goes back to 2018. So this is the thing about our rush defense going into next year. I don't really care if we give up rushing yards next year, okay? I really don't. At the very least, though, a step in the right direction would be making them earn it, right? Make them have to run through something. Make them have to run through arms, legs, bodies, do whatever it takes. Put your damn body on the line to force them to run for big gains, which means staying gap sound. That is normally a good way of determining if you are really good at rush yards before contact or rush yards after contact, okay? We have done many a film study, some that are still up on our Patreon page, patreon.com/LSUfootball, where you will see our DTs in particular not be gap sound and just give up huge gaping holes for running backs to run through. And so much of the explosive runs that are given up in modern day college football has more to do with the defense making a mistake compared to the offense making a mistake, right? Or the offense making an amazing play. right? So many of the explosive runs just come down to defensive tackles or ends or linebackers not filling their holes properly. Pause, but not pause. It's just the truth, okay? So we need to do a better job next year of just, I say next year, in 10 days, forcing Clemson, forcing Ole Miss, forcing Florida, force them to earn those yards. Force them, okay? And then that will lead to an overall better yard per carry mark, and that will lead to an overall better defense. Do your job. It's very simple. We started with our first super chat. Jamie wants to talk about Auburn and all their championships that they are claiming. We'll get to that. LSU Monster, Cliff, good to see everyone in here today on a glorious Football Wednesday. All right. So about the claimed championships of Auburn. Let them have it. You know, is it sad? Yes. It is kind of weird, though, that not only did Auburn decide to do this, they are also deciding to officially retire the number of Cam Newton. So, just for clarity here, Auburn, they, like Joe Burrow with number 9, nobody has worn that number since Joe Burrow wore it in 2019, okay? And at Auburn, no one has worn number 2 worn by Cam Newton since Cam, okay? And this kind of...
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Came a kerfuffle when a 5-star quarterback who goes by the name of Deuce Knight wore number 2 in high school. And it was brought up to Cam Newton that Deuce Knight wanted to wear number 2 at Auburn, and Kev said no. And I don't blame him. I just think it's kind of crazy that a high school kid would do something like that. But whatever the case may be, Cam Newton said no, and I think Auburn probably said, look, we just need to officially retire this number. But it is interesting that Auburn is looking back into yesteryear for two different things that they could celebrate their glorious past. The first, doing the Cam Newton jersey retirement. And then, of course, claiming 9 different national championships. All right. Some of them are legitimate, but they decided to add a few extra to their trophy case. All right. I don't really give a damn. I do think it's kind of lame. And I do also think Auburn understands that they have had 4 straight losing seasons. That is true. 4 straight losing seasons. I incorrectly claimed last night that they had 4 straight years of not going to a bowl game. That's not true. The stat is 4 straight losing seasons at Auburn, which is crazy to think about. And I think camp isn't going as swimmingly as some at Auburn thought it would be going. There's growing belief that Hugh Freeze is just fried out, that he's Coach Owen the thing up there at Auburn. But I do think they have a talented team, and I do think they bounce back and have an 8-4 season. I could definitely see 8-4. Auburn, my favorite stat about them going into this next year, top 5 in defensive and offensive yard per play last year, and they return some key pieces. But this, of course, isn't an Auburn channel. But I appreciate the super chat, Jamie. Thank you so much. I'll talk about anything. All right. I was going to save this for later, but Scott Hansen. This is like a trend right now, saying that nobody can name 30 college quarterbacks outside of the University of Alabama. He said that in a radio interview. And Scott, you are mistaken, brother. I would venture off to say that probably there's 102 people in here right now. I would say probably half of you could do at least 15 right now off the top of your head outside of the University of Alabama. I'm a sicko. I know that Eastern Tennessee State University just announced that they have a quarterback battle between Jacoby Criswell and Cade McNamara. I know who Eric Dampier is. I mean, I'm a sicko. I mean, this is what I do. It's college football. Now, I'm not the best at trivia. I have a bad memory. I feel like every day Will Smith for Men in Black hits me in the face. But Scott Hansen, come on, bro. I mean, come on. You give me time, I can give you 30. Maybe not right off the top of my dome, but I have seen some others do this very thing. My guy, Shahan Jayaraja, did it. But yeah, I'm probably going to respond a little bit later to that. But here we go. A few practice things that I found to be interesting. Obviously, there are many looking forward to the scrimmage on Saturday, where, from my understanding, media will be able to attend. I think a few players, families will fly down for this one. That is scrimmage last Saturday. I am a big believer in doing scrimmages at night when you practice mostly during the day, and what your players accustomed to practicing and scrimmaging at night. This is what I do expect, though, from Saturday, because that is what a lot of us are going to be looking forward to, reports and eyes in the sky from that event. I would like to think that this scrimmage won't really be a scrimmage. I think it'll be a little bit more kind of situational stuff. I don't think that they're going to show any exotic plays or anything like that, but I could see it being more like, this is what we're going to do on special teams. This is how we want to line up offensively and defensively and all that stuff. So there's a lot of hype going into the scrimmage, but when a scrimmage is happening, what, roughly 7 days before the actual shebang bang gets going, I think it's important to note that I think at this point, LSU is not going to be doing as much full speed scrimmaging like they basically did this past Saturday, but I could be wrong. I could be wrong. I do think it'll be very situational, which is normally how football practices go, right? Obviously, you start installing and getting ready for Clemson maybe a little bit earlier than normal because obviously this is such a big game. But the week of is when you really start hammering down your game plan and what you want to do versus that specific opponent, okay? As far as Whit Weeks is concerned, obviously he was held out of practice. I do think it is important to note that LSU just doesn't, or I should say they do have more data than what they used to as far as player load management. And with Whit Weeks being a guy that played a lot of snaps and is still coming off what was a very gruesome injury, but because he's built different than all of us, he was able to recover pretty quickly. You don't want to put too much load on his body, and I'm not pausing that. That is not that was the official reason that Brian Kelly gave. I do think he's fine. Now, one thing I did also want to get into, and I was going to save this for later, but I want to dive into it now because it's one thing that I can't quit thinking about. It's the 2027 quarterback class. So we're not even talking about this next recruiting cycle. We're talking about 2027. So the 2026 crop of LSU recruits looks really good. It's a top 10 national class with the ability to maybe go top five. We've already seen a few of the players in this class play a high school game. Deuce Gerald's put on a show last Saturday that many of you watched on basically a national stream with the Max Preps. But LSU won't at this juncture have a 2026 quarterback committed. It comes out of 2027. And this will be the most legendary quarterback recruitment in Louisiana history because there's three big names, two of which are in Louisiana, one of which is in the state of Texas, but his last name is Nussmeier. And as we all know, the Nussmeiers have heavy ties to not only LSU, but also the state of Louisiana as well. So technically, three Louisiana quarterbacks that they are after in this cycle. Okay. And it's Peyton Houston of Evangel Christian. Then you also have of Dunham, Elijah Haven. And then you also have Colton Nussmeier. All right. So I don't know Colton personally. I've gotten to know some in the Nussmeier orbit. And at this juncture, there was a Steve Wilfong prediction logged in for Colton Nussmeier to go to LSU. Okay. So obviously Colton is already going to have a relationship with LSU, one that is very close to that of Joe Sloan and obviously Garrett Nussmeier, who has been Joe Sloan's main guy, right? Garrett has only been quarterback coached by Joe Sloan since the beginning of the Brian Kelly era. Obviously, it was Jake Peetz's first season, but this is Joe Sloan's guy, Garrett Nussmeier. So does that weigh into this recruitment? Maybe it does, right? Because Colton Nussmeier, of course, is a really athletic left-handed quarterback. He has a little bit more rushing upside than Garrett. He's obviously taller than Garrett. He's got a really good arm. And I don't mind LSU going in that direction because more than likely you're not taking two of these three quarterbacks. I don't think that they want to be doubles in any class. And that's how it normally goes. Rarely do you see two of the top 10 or 15 quarterbacks go to the same school. The last time that almost happened was with Georgia, with Ryan Puglisi, who's now the top backup at Georgia, and Dylan Raiola of Nebraska. So it's rare, right? But, you know, I've gotten a few questions about this. I'm fine. Obviously, I'm very fine with Colton Nussmeier. My main thing is just landing one of those three, right? Because it gives you a lot of recruiting momentum, considering you have whiffed on some pretty big-name quarterbacks during the last couple of cycles that you were in for. And you want to make sure that you gain at least one for some positive recruiting momentum buzz and all that stuff. So, yes, at this juncture, it looks as if that guy's going to be Colton Nussmeier. Now, the question is that the best option for LSU at this point? Is he the best quarterback for the Tigers moving forward? Well, you know, with any high school quarterback recruitment, it is early. The likelihood of any quarterback staying at the initial school that they sign with is small, right? Last year, I believe the number was 68% of starters were transfers. I could be having that stat mixed up. It could be that 68% of quarterbacks from their original recruiting class are now at new schools. It could be one or the other. But the truth is, and the overarching theme is, most of your quarterbacks do transfer. Now, this is kind of a rare year where we do have quite a few starters that have been with their school and waited their turn, so to speak. Obviously, Arch Manning, Garrett Nussmeier, Simpson, Gunnar Stockton. You know, that's four quarterbacks. Not only four quarterbacks, those are four quarterbacks at the arguably top four schools in the SEC that all waited their turn. So, it is interesting. Obviously, Marcel Reed was an original recruit at A&M, and a guy by the name of Lenore Sellers, who a lot of you are familiar with, was an original recruit at their school. So maybe nature is healing because you don't have as many of those year five, year six guys that that hang around and have all that extra eligibility. But I do believe that the transfer portal will be used for quarterback in 2026. More on that. We spoke with Mike Scarborough on that topic last Thursday. So we'll see what happens there. You know, for me, and I've shared this on Patreon, this is not the be-all, end-all, but Peyton Houston is one of the best Louisiana high school football players I've ever watched. Now, notice, I did not say quarterback. I'm saying total football players, period, end of story, any position. That does not mean you're going to be the best college quarterback. Obviously, the other two have a pretty drastic size advantage over Peyton Houston. So that is part of this equation here. But I'm telling you right now, man, Peyton Houston is the real freaking deal. That dude can flat out play. He has got an advanced mind for the position. Production wise, he is one of the best. If he were to sign with LSU, he would be the most productive at the trajectory he's on. If stats stay somewhat similar to what he did this past year, he would be the most productive Louisiana or the most productive LSU signee at the quarterback position ever. if he were to stay on the trajectory he's on. So that doesn't mean that he's going to be better than Nussmeier or Haven, but it is something. Okay. So yes, it is true. There are some predictions out there for Colton Nussmeier. So there you go. Let's go to Prescia, who's got some sources. He says Elijah Haven is not going to Florida. That prediction was a lie. Yeah, you know, I'm still for Elijah Haven as well. Like I said, I wouldn't be disappointed at any of the three. Quarterback projections are tough. Obviously, it's a fluid situation. LSU also believes in the quarterbacks that they have in the room now being starters down the road. And obviously, we're talking about 2027, but 2026 does play into it. And there's a lot of different reasons as to why, and money is part of it. But, you know, that's something else you don't know. And I'm not saying this to pressure. I'm just saying this to everyone. Cost matters here, too. Cost does matter. Because if you were to say, hey, so-and-so wants $1 million, which is about what a five-star quarterback goes for, maybe a little less than that, just depending on who it is. If so-and-so wants $1 million, but the other only wants $500K, you know, especially for a quarterback who's not going to play right away, it's something, right? It's something. Alexander says, if he doesn't go to LSU, I'd rather him go to Michigan than stay in the sex. In the sex. It sells. I know you meant to say SEC. But that's the only recruiting thing I really wanted to get into now, because it is fascinating that recruiting prediction did come in. Carter, does it really matter to me? Yeah, it does. It does. To a certain degree, it does. You know, I do think for me, I want whatever is best for the university, no matter who it is. Okay, there's not one player of those three or one player in general that matters more to the LSU brand or matters more to me than the LSU brand. Okay, but you know, I do think. Oh, okay. So your question is a little bit different. Do I think it matters that Nuss is a left-hander? Yeah, it's strange that that has actually been brought up, which makes no sense to me because, well, one of the best SEC quarterbacks ever is Tua, and Tua was lefty. He's definitely one of the best to have not actually won the Heisman. He's up there, but Tua was left-handed, so end of story. Right. And I understand small sample size, whatever. You know, I'm trying to think of some other left-handed quarterbacks. I think every single starter in the SEC this year will be right-handed. I'm trying to think of top backups in the SEC. I know I think Arkansas's top backup, KJ Jackson, is left-handed. So it is rare. It just doesn't matter, though. Does the ball spin differently? Sure. But what if this kid is Michael Vick? You know, what if this kid is Tua? So, yeah, you know, I just don't think it matters. I just don't. Now, I want to get back to current LSU stuff. You know, there's so much about who of the LSU wide receivers are going to emerge. And I will say this till I'm blue in the face, involving wide receivers and camp reports. Wide receivers flash in practice more than any other position because a lot of what you see in practice are one-on-one drills versus DBs, where the quarterback throwing isn't under pressure, where wide receivers can get away with every single dipsy doodle move that you have ever seen. And DBs are oftentimes just one-on-one when, you know, oftentimes DBs aren't just in particular corners. Oftentimes they're not in an oasis of space, right? And then, of course, in actual scrimmages, a lot of guys have dominant practices during scrimmages. One guy who kept lighting it up in scrimmages last year And people couldn't quit talking about it was Shelton Sampson. And guess what happened? He finished his LSU career without ever catching a pass. So it's important to keep in mind that there's going to be some wide receivers that are left out of this equation. But I think based on what has happened in practice and based on how I think Joe Sloan wants this offense to operate, these are the four that I feel will be the most productive. Aaron Anderson in the slot, for certain. Chris Hilton, for certain. Now, some of that is based on how those players have performed with Garrett Nussmeier. Some of that is just the chemistry that they already have with Garrett built in. With those two in particular having, what, now at least 3 years experience, Garrett and Chris were in the 2021 recruiting class. So that's 5 years, coming on 5 years experience, which is crazy. Okay. Yes, Austin Simmons. I knew there was somebody, and I was like, it's Austin Simmons, left-handed in the SEC. I appreciate that. I was like, there has to be somebody. And of course, it's Austin Simmons. But, you know, as far as the other two receivers are concerned, I could see that being a little bit wider of a range of outcomes, but I have come to a conclusion that two of those names are the ones that really, really stick out to me. And I'll tell you who those are right after this. Are you missing that sweet swing? If pain is holding your golf game back, you must check out the full simulator at the Lafayette location of LeBourne Therapy Center. Yes, Chase and his team built this simulator to go along with a full set of programs catered to your needs. Yes, this entire team at LeBourne Therapy worked hard to fix that back. Your elbow, shoulders, wrists, knees, toes, it doesn't matter. At their Lafayette location, 337-981-4053. Call today. But what if you don't golf? And what if you don't live in Lafayette? No problem. They fix anything therapy related. Book today, LeBourneTherapy.com, with locations in Cairncrow, Youngsville, Morgan City, and Crowley. LeBourneTherapy.com, LaBorde Therapy.com. Let's go. Special thanks to Thomas and his team for supporting us. So now you see all of the wide receivers on the screen right here. And the other two will be Nick Anderson and Berrion Brown. I truly do believe those two have separated themselves from a few of these other wide receivers that are in the room. I don't include Xavion Thomas in this because to me, he's kind of the gadget guy, which is a different role per se. And you guys know how high I am on Xavion. So I think it's going to be a five-player rotation. And some of that is just due to age, right? These are the most experienced wide receivers on the team. Pretty much everyone you see here at the single digit. Xavion, Aaron, Destin Hill, Chris Hilton, Nick Anderson, and Berrion Brown. But I think outside of Hill, who could also be a factor, he's had some good days in practice. Also a year five guy from the 2021 class. I truly do think those are going to be your big players. Cal Parker is someone that LSU likes a lot. He has experience catching a touchdown from Garrett Nussmeier. Jelani Watkins was also mentioned by Brian Kelly, maybe the fastest receiver of this group. But one thing I think LSU wants to do this next season is throw the ball deep. All right. And there are two different things that need to happen for LSU to be a better deep ball team. All right. So Brian Kelly mentioned in his last press conference, and I won't play the audio because we did it on yesterday's live stream, but he said, yeah, we were desperately missing Chris as a deep option, and we wanted to get the football down the field more. All right. Here's a problem with that, and I do think it is very important. Garrett missed on a lot of deep balls. And one thing about Garrett's deep ball on straight vertical routes is that it's not his strength. It's not. Even on some of the ones he's connected, they have a tendency to tail just a little bit at the end. And what does that mean? Well, more often than not, the ones that he actually does connect are slightly underthrown, right? Now, they're still good enough for us to gain quite a bit of yards. But, you know, there are so many of these that he's thrown where he's the receiver has to stop just a little bit to catch it. I prefer an underthrow compared to an overthrow. And we get tackled at the 1 or 2 or 3 yard line. It's happened a few times. But to me, it's better than overthrows. And he's had a few overthrows, right? And, you know, we can say, well, we didn't have Chris early in the season and that hurt some of our deep ball stuff. Well, the truth is we missed a few explosives to CJ Daniels. And obviously that's not really, really, really his game, like just straight vertical speed. But we did miss a few, okay? So that's why a guy like Berrien Brown is going to play a lot, because he gives you two different speed, vertical, nine route, open the top, off of defense types of guys. So it's interesting. It is very, very interesting that LSU has hammered home the point. We want to get more vertical, okay? But Garrett, as a deep ball thrower, needs to be better. He will be. He will be. And also, we need to be able to run the football. Because if we can't run the football, and boxes can be defended with a lighter amount of players, and just lighter players in general, that means you can have more defensive backs on the field, and you can play more soft quarters. And then, you know, there is a benefit of that because Garrett might be the best intermediate passer we've ever seen at LSU. That's probably still Joe and Jaden, but Garrett is elite at that, in particular throwing over the middle. You know, we could still make it work without a run game. So we'll see. But for me, that's how I feel about the LSU wide receiver room. Now, I would prefer that number get down to 3 core guys. I would prefer that. I think a lot of you would prefer that as well. Just to have a tighter rotation. Okay. Now, it is a glorious Wednesday here. We will be live tomorrow at 5 p.m. Central. Okay. Thursday's live stream, once again, will be at 5 p.m. Central. Okay. Really cool thing. I normally like to, on weekdays, to go live at 6. We are going live at 5 because I will be doing play-by-play this year for some local schools. And I'm really excited about that. You know, my goal is to do college play-by-play or professional play-by-play. Doesn't matter the sport, but you know, I prefer football and basketball, as does many. But I'm really excited to get back on the play-by-play for football. I've not done play-by-play for football in a very long time, which sounds counterintuitive because my whole life is centered. My paychecks are centered around the sport of football. So I'll provide links for my basketball live streams. It's shocking how many of you actually watch that when I share the links. But I'm really excited for it. And my play-by-play style is wild. Okay. It is wild. Let's get to a few comments here. Pierce says, it occurred to me that high school quarterback recruiting has been really off ever since the Holstein-Howard year. Every single move has been wrong, arguably from Hurley reclassifying to not keeping Collins. Interesting. Well, we don't know what Walker Howard really is just yet. You know, one thing I find to be very fascinating about the quarterback position is we do celebrate those that stay. It is risky to stay at your school because you never know when you're going to play. Ty Simpson took a risky bet waiting as long as he did. Garrett Nussmeier took a risky bet. Arch was a little less risky for a lot of different reasons, but they took risky bets staying around at their original school. And that that deserves praise for how much they like the original school. And obviously, you know, even if you're a backup, you're still getting paid well in a lot of instances. But if you are going to transfer and you've not played yet, you need to do what Walker Howard did and transfer down to a school where you know you're going to win the battle. Because him transferring to Ole Miss was insane. Did he really think he was going to beat out Jackson Dart, who wasn't quite the first-round talent that he is now? Okay. Did he really think he was going to beat him out? As someone who's never played a snap. And then the Spencer Sanders decision was even worse. So you're capped off by two different guys. And there was a lot more to that recruitment and all of that. But, you know, as far as the quarterback position, go somewhere where you can play. Go somewhere. Now, it's a little bit different for a guy like Michael Van Buren, where you now have tape out there. You got to play that first season. You have good tape, right? Now, you can go into different directions about how good that tape is, but Michael Van Buren could go to many of schools and say, look, the guy you have might be good, but in my 1 year of playing, I played more top-end defenses than whoever you've had for 2 years here, sometimes 3 years. That's how many good defenses you played last year. And let's just say Van Buren theoretically wants to go somewhere else after this year. He can then tell schools, hey, I learned from a first-round pick in Garrett Nussmeier. So he's got a little bit more leverage playing early. But, you know, you really need to go somewhere where you can play. And Eli Holstein realized that pretty quickly. And he said, I'm gone. Okay. Mike says the Saints would hire me for 2 seconds. I'm not beating out Joel Myers. I'm not beating him out. 904, Drew says, you don't know Hurley, man. He's been a dog since he was peewee. LSU's run game would have to be really bad. LSU Monster says, what if I fought the Hulk? Would I fight the Hulk? No. Would I fight Mark Ruffalo is the question. Yeah. Let's do it. Okay. Now, I want to do this before we get to my final topics here. Let me know where you are watching from, even if you're watching this live or if you're watching this down the road. Hit me up at Power Hour LSU on Twitter or Instagram. Let me know what area of the country you're watching from. Okay. Now, I want to go to the defensive side of the football. And this happens, you know, the live stream happens, and then you have a bunch of people that flock in towards the end. I normally like to book in my streams talking about what we talked about at the beginning. Rush yards before contact. That's what RYBC stands for. If I'm Blake Baker, I'm asking myself with this defense, can we do a better job muddying up the picture for the run games that we will face this year? And by muddying up the pictures, I mean, can we stay gap sound enough for us to beat everybody that's on our schedule next year and slow down their rushing attacks? Now, we can get into technicalities of what is better for you to stop the rushing attacks. Do you need faster players out there? Do you need bigger players out there? Do you need to run more tight Arandian fronts where, you know, you have a zero tech and 2-4 eyes to block and clog those interior gaps? That's my preferred method of playing defense, in particular at the college level, but you know, we can get into a discussion about that at the NFL level as well. What is our best way of doing this? Well, just by having Harold Perkins at the star, that in and of itself will make your defense meatier, thicker, if you will, because oftentimes defenses, instead of Harold Perkins, would have a defensive back in that spot. I'm also not opposed, even if Harold Perkins is a star, I'm not opposed to him actually playing one of the traditional linebacker spots alongside of Whit Weeks in some nickel packages as well, just to have Harold on the field if he's playing at that level. Even though it is a slightly different position, it's one he should be able to hold his own, even though he has struggled at that over the past couple of seasons. Okay? So, it is so important to make life difficult for the opposing offenses. Make them have to not just be able to plant their foot in the ground and run through wide open gaps. I don't care if our guys are getting flattened. I can argue that you getting pancaked is better than you over-penetrating and getting out of your gaps. Because if you're getting pancaked, at least there is a pile. At least there's traffic for the running back to run through. But if you just run completely out of the play, that just leaves a wide open gap unimpeded. Now, I'm not meaning to go 40U on you. And that is my favorite Twitter trend I have ever seen. So there's a trend on Twitter showing all these 37-year-old and up football leagues. Yes, a bunch of old heads reliving their past. So I don't mean to go all 40U on you, but when I played defensive tackle in high school, I was undersized. I wasn't big enough. I wasn't strong enough. Hell, I'm not strong enough now. I lift every day, and I could barely put up big weight. It's sad. I talked to one of my gym folk today, Jimmy. I was like, dude, I just want to get strong, bro. And I just can't. It's just impossible. It's just my body. But as an undersized DT, if I felt myself getting dominated, I'm just going to form a pile. I'm just going to fall down. I don't mind getting pancaked. But if I do, I just want to make a pile. Okay? So, you know, it was my favorite thing in the world to do. The 40U stuff, I hate to say this, and my wife would kill me for this. I want to sign up and play. I really do. I miss playing football so much. There's no sport that you miss more after you're done playing than that. There's none. Nothing comes even close, honestly, to tackle football. Okay? Who the hell put me at DT? You look like you weigh 190. And you're pretty close. That actually was my high school weight. Right now I'm at 197. You tore your ACL playing semi-pro? Well, with all due respect to you, 904 Drew, I'm built different, son. I'm built different. Like when Odell got the Rona, he said, the Rona's not ready for this body. The Rona, it's not ready for me. Oh, That's crazy. Knoxville Grumpy Fish, good to see you. Check out some of my Tennessee breakdowns on Power Hour SEC. 904 Drew, good to see you. Denham Springs in the building. Okay. Why am I rolling up my sleeves? I don't really have big biceps. It's just something I do, honestly. I really don't. It's just something I do. I'm normally wearing like a bigger collar tee, so I don't have to worry about the sleeves or whatever, but no. Now, a few other SEC news and notes. It is amazing how many just people I respect that are blowing steam for Oklahoma this year. It makes absolutely no sense to me. And I understand that their roster is really good. Oklahoma's got themselves a roster. They spent well in the portal. but I'm not in love with their wide receiver room. We'll see if Bindabaugh can work his magic on the offensive line. They do get such massive upgrades at quarterback. Running back room is going to be really good. Defensive line is going to be really good. We'll see if David Stone was worth getting him back out of the portal, the former five-star. Armason Thomas probably is the most underrated SEC edge, and this is a very strong SEC edge year. And the back seven should be fine without Stutzman and Bowman. You know, based on people that know Oklahoma better than me, they say that that back seven is still going to be good. But goodness gracious, that schedule. I have Oklahoma at 7-5, 8-4 right now. I'm just in a weird spot with Oklahoma. It's a weird love-hate relationship. I've gotten to know some of their fans. I want to go to the game in Norman this year. But as we always do, we go to the handy dandy schedule matrix right here. Oklahoma, Illinois State, Michigan at home, at Temple, Auburn at home, bye week, Kent State, then back to back road travel, Texas and South Carolina. And you have Ole Miss at Tennessee, bye week before at Bama, Missouri, and LSU. There are many saying that this is the toughest schedule in the SEC. You know, the thing about Oklahoma that makes this schedule very tricky is that they don't play the worst SEC teams. I think if you were to ask everybody in the Southeastern Conference who the bottom four SEC teams are, they would say Kentucky, Mississippi State, Arkansas, and probably Vanderbilt. They don't play any of those four teams. They don't. So their SEC games are harder than your normal SEC games. Now, if you were to look at their schedule again, they do avoid playing Georgia. They do avoid playing Florida. But, man, this is just not shaping up nicely. It's just not. Now, Michigan, it's good to get them early in the season compared to late. But you're going to have a motivated Auburn Tiger team coming to town. Auburn is not going to be any worse than 2-1 before they play Oklahoma. So they're still going to be motivated. And obviously, you know, their starting quarterback more than likely will be Jackson Arnold if he's not benched by then. That's going to be a motivated group coming to Norman. So I'm in a spot here where I am fading Oklahoma. I'm actually leaning towards their under on the win total. But I'm telling you, there is a growing number of sharp people that I follow that like Oklahoma. They do. Okay. Woodland Hills, California. You never miss a show. What's up, Scott? Good to see you. I need to come see you out there, Woodland Hills. I got a few friends out there in Woodland Hills. Let's go to SLS. John Mateer had three games at or below 50% completion percentage. Those were against Texas Tech, Washington, and Fresno. Not exactly powerhouse teams. So we did a film study on the Washington game. That game was actually fine from Mateer. That one was also a little bit earlier in the season. He was fine in that game. Fresno was what was tough. I never charted the Texas Tech game, so, you know. The game that everyone points to him being terrible was a Wyoming game where they got upset. You know, for me, I'm kind of on the fence about Mateer. I think it's going to be one of those situations where he is really, really, really good in most of the games that he plays, but he's absolute ass in two or three of them. And in at least one of them, that's going to cost you a game. Okay. You can be ass and still find a way to win when you have running backs like Jay Knott. who should be good, even though his advanced metrics last year were terrible. He had a bad ankle. But I don't know. Something just seems off about Venables. I don't know exactly why, because he is arguably the best defensive coordinator of this era. He's up there. Of the past 20 years, he's up there. His run at Clemson. Obviously, Aranda's in that mix, but Foster's in that mix. I mean, there's a few others. But I don't know. I just don't really see it with Oklahoma. I just don't. But I will say, I love their fan base. I love what they've done with Power Hour SEC, man. They love our film studies. They really do. Let's go to Pegasus. Speaking of OU, can Nuss have a Baker Heisman-like season this year? Is that a fair expectation? Yeah, I can't really see a world where – actually, I can see a world where Garrett is like a Heisman winner. I can. But Baker Mayfield statistically might be the best college quarterback of all time. When you cumulative take a look at his career, I mean, that's how good Baker Mayfield was at Oklahoma. But Garrett plays far tougher defenses. And Baker, at the same time, had Lincoln Riley in his prime. And if you were to take a look at Baker's skill guys and you're compare it to that of Garrett Nussmeier, it's pretty even. It's very even, in fact. I mean, there are a lot of Pro Bowl-level offensive players Baker Mayfield was throwing the football to his Heisman season. So he had Hollywood Brown, CeeDee Lamb, Mark Andrews, all on the same offense. Mario Anderson, his running back, was also very underrated. Number 24. He got hurt, so he didn't really have an NFL career. But he's kind of forgotten about because Oklahoma is just, you know what their running backs are at Oklahoma. I mean, they're hyenas. They're savages, dude. They're this arguably RBU at Oklahoma. But, yeah, I mean, could I see Garrett Nussmeier winning the Heisman? Sure. But it's going to be hard for Garrett to put up Baker numbers just because Baker just had everything in that offense. That offensive line, too. Who was that offensive line? That was Orlando Brown, Pro Bowler, first-round pick. And then, I can't name the others, but there was another Pro Bowl level center or guard on that front. I think played for the Ravens. They were just so loaded. And you got to remember that was against Big 12 competition. Now Pegasus putting the stats up there. Baker threw for 43-40 and 41 tutties with 5 picks. Yeah, I actually could see Garrett doing this. I doubt it gets to 310 rushing yards because that's about where Burrow was. Burrow was 339. And Burrow was a better red zone runner than Baker was a red zone runner. Burrow's one of the best red zone runners at QB I've ever seen. Now, of the quarterbacks that you don't think of as mobile threats, obviously Cam and Tebow clear everyone. But, and Jaden, of course, but that doesn't need mentioning. But could we see Garrett be a good red zone runner this year? Yeah. I mean, Drew Brees was a good red zone runner. I'm serious. Mostly through QB sneaks, but he was a creative red zone runner too. Will says, who do I have winning the Heisman? Yeah, I mean, there's a few. Like, if you think John Mateer is good and you think Oklahoma can win 10 games, then you know, for Oklahoma to overcome the schedule that they have, you're going to need somebody at quarterback. You're going to need a dude at quarterback. So maybe Mateer is worth the Heisman bet. Lagway might be worth the Heisman bet if you want to go a little bit more long shotty. Because the thing is, you would like to think either Florida or Oklahoma, coming off these rough last couple of seasons, rough for their standards last couple of seasons, you would like to think that one of them breaks out with all the talent that both of those schools have. So let's just say one of those teams go 9-3 with that schedule that they have. That means one of their quarterbacks was otherworldly. So Lagway's a little bit longer of a shot to for the Heisman Trophy. Obviously, I would take Garrett over both of them, but if you were to place Heisman bets, I like to bet long shots, even though Heisman lately has been a little chalky. So, you know, you want to take those shots, go for it. That breeze run was elite. It was. We got Argyle, Texas. Welcome to the channel, Ben Mikowski. Good stuff. Fun live stream. Let's see. Thanks to our top super chatter, Jamie. Don't forget. Let me make sure that I actually have it up here. I probably should have checked this beforehand. So that's on me. There is, and I'll show you right now. It wasn't showing for me at first, but I think I know why. So if you want to support PHL, there's a new way you can do it. Obviously, I prefer you join the Patreon, patreon.com/LSU football. You get the extra film studies. But you can also click that join button if you don't want to go on Patreon, which is a different app. Now, with one click, you can also support the PHL Patreon. If you sign up for the gold tier, I'll give you Discord access. So once again, the first person that signs up for the $9.99 gold tier on YouTube, I will send you an autograph LSU card immediately. You just got to show me that you did it. And there you go. I'll give you Discord access as well. It's going to go hard or go home. We'll take a few more here. He says, I'll take 3,500-ish yards in 12 games with a much better running game. I think another 4K passing season means we couldn't run the ball again. Yeah. I mean, another thing is, if you're going to put up big, 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 big stats, you also need your defense to kind of sort of suck, right? You know, you if you're a Joe Burrow fan, like all of us are, part of the blessing was Aranda's defense having some tough days because Joe really got to air it out. I mean, really, really, really get to air it out. So when you're a quarterback on a dominant team and you're beating everybody 35-0 at half and there's a few pick sixes mixed in there, it really eats into your quarterback stats. So with Garrett, I actually agree with go hard or go home. Remember this, and you know, I was deciding between the defensive thumbnail and an offensive thumbnail. I wanted to do the rush yards before contact rant before the season begins, but I kind of wanted to share this stat as a thumbnail image for our YouTube audience, which is 34. 34 is such a critical number for LSU last year. That is the amount of passing attempts that they had in at least every single football game. 34, which is a ridiculously high number. Okay. In and of itself, 34 passes in a game isn't that high, but I want you to take a look at this. And this is truly mind-blowing. And it may seem like it's small, but it's not. Pause. You'll see that LSU averaged 5 more passes per game than any other team in the SEC, which is not good. But their 34 passes that they attempted in every single game that they played last year was more than what Texas averaged per game. Now, think about Texas and their passing offense and how good it was last year with Golden, Wingo, Blue, Helm. So what does that mean? Well, Texas, they had some issues running the football last year with that offensive line. But part of why LSU's passing attempts were so big is actually twofold. The first is we couldn't run the football. But the second thing goes back to the deep ball accuracy rant from earlier in the stream. When you're not hitting explosive plays, that means you have to matriculate the football down the field in chunks, in 10, 15, 20-yard chunks, instead of 60, 70, 80-yard bombs. So it's a good point from Go Hard or Go Home. Now, tomorrow on Patreon, I have unlocked one of Clemson's defense's biggest weaknesses, and it's not their rushing defense. Our guest will this past weekend, Will Vandevoort, a Clemson beat writer, a very talented blogger, Will absolutely crushed it, talked about how Clemson running to the left side was a big problem for them, the runs that they gave up there. But that's not the weakness either. All right? We have a PHL exclusive stat dropping on Patreon tomorrow. So sign up down below. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom! Tonight we are doing taco plates. Let's go.